getting ready to begin your hearing, and the Honorable Ms. Leah Rittenhouse will serve as the lead for your hearing at this time, sir. So just hang on to the phone, sir.
Mr. Garrison?
Yes, ma'am.
Could you please state your full name and your ABC number for the record?
Terry B. Garrison, 207531.
Thank you, sir. You're appearing today before the Board of Executive Clemency, and I'd like to introduce the members of the board that will be considering your case today. If you look to your right, I'm the one in red, so it's the other side.
Okay.
I wore that deliberately so you could pick me up. It's the Honorable David Merrill right next to me here in the middle, as our board chairman, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, and my name's Gail Rittenhouse. I'll conduct your hearing today. We'll start with a brief review. So you're here for a commutation hearing, and the purpose of the hearing is imminent danger of death. You've applied for this based on imminent danger of death, and a doctor at the Department of Corrections, Dr. Robertson, has certified that or stated that you have a life expectancy of less than four months or less. So, and that is the criteria to be able to consider this type of hearing. So we'll just start with a brief review. This crime involves a period of several years in which primarily two victims were molested. May 15th of 2006, Mr. Garrison was then charged with 8 counts of molestation of a child, class 2 felony, and these were dangerous crimes against children. One count of public sexual indecency with a minor, that's a class 5 felony. 3 counts of sexual abuse, which is a class 3 felony, and also considered dangerous crime against children. One count of indecent exposure, which is a class 6 felony. One count of sexual abuse, then, a class 3 felony, and also cited dangerous crimes against children. Mr. Garrison then took a plea, and on May 16th, the next day, pled guilty to count 1, molestation of a child, which is a class 2 felony, dangerous crime against children, and amended counts 2 and 14, which is attempted molestation of a child, that are class 3 felonies, also dangerous crimes against children. The rest of the counts then were dismissed, so that would be 3 through 13, and there may have been more above that, above 14. But those counts were all dismissed. You were then sentenced on July 7th, Mr. Garrison, July 7th, 2006, to 17 years to be served at the Department of Corrections, which is the sentence you're serving now. And this prison term then is to be followed by 2 concurrent terms of lifetime probation. So, Mr. Garrison, would just briefly review your prison circumstances. It looks like you've done some programming while you're there, functional literacy, a GED, and a college degree. Is that true? What's the college degree?
In culinary.
Okay. The culinary program?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And Thinking for a Change as well. Did you complete any other programming there, sir?
Yes, ma'am.
Take any sex offender treatment, sir?
No, ma'am.
Okay. And did you apply for it and you were refused, or did you just not apply for it?
I just never offered it.
Okay. All right, sir. And it looks like, I'm curious, you have one discipline on your record that I'm just very curious about, and it was a major for fighting. Do you remember what that was about? What happened?
Yes, ma'am. There was a injured Lucas who was assaulting a Bellsworth who was in MS and was in a wheelchair, and I went to stop him from beating him up, and he turned against me, and they were aggressive going towards me by swimming at me.
Okay.
And I defended myself.
Okay, so that's what just happened in January, about a year
yes,
ago.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Yep. Yes, ma'am, I was just defending a terrorist.
Okay, understood. Okay, sir. Well, your application indicates that you would like to go to hospice, I believe. Is that your intent, sir?
Yes, ma'am. I'm going to hospice, an extended care facility.
Okay, and do you have a facility picked out?
Yes, ma'am, we do.
Okay, what is that?
The extended care facility would be the Springs at 3212 North Mineral Road in Scottsdale.
3212 North, what was the name of the road again, sir? I'm sorry.
Miller Road.
Miller? Okay, North Miller Road in Scottsdale.
If I'm accepted, yeah.
Okay. Oh, but you've applied, you don't have an acceptance?
No.
Okay.
And then I have the comprehensive hospice and palliative care facility.
And that's another facility?
Yes.
That's like a possibility?
Yes.
Okay, hospice. And where is that?
Excuse me?
Do you have an address for that one?
Yes, it's you want to take
That's okay, take your time. All right. To them yet?
No, not yet.
Okay. Do you have, Mr. Garrison, do you have family in the area or friends that...
Yes, I have a son and then a daughter-in-law and my brother, and I have a good friend who lives in Scottsdale.
Okay, and where's your son live?
He lives in Peoria.
Okay. And where does your brother live?
He lives in Sun City.
Okay. And you said you had a friend also? Where is your friend?
She lives in Scottsdale.
Scottsdale, okay. Okay. And is there any particular reason why they're not here today, or?
I let them have time to let them know.
Okay. So when were you notified about this hearing?
Saturday, by Saturday.
Saturday, okay. Okay. So what would be your plan? Your plan would be that one of these people, your son or your brother or friend, would come and get you there and then take you to the facility?
Yes.
Okay.
That would be my plan if I can get in contact with them.
Okay. When's the last time you were in contact with them?
I'm in contact with them through the mail.
Okay. But you don't talk to them on the phone?
No, ma'am. It costs too much money.
Oh, okay. Understood. Okay. So you haven't really spoken to them about this, about taking them, taking you to the facility. They don't. Are they aware that you?
No, ma'am.
Do they know that you applied for this?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am.
Okay, sir.
My friend in Scottsdale, she's aware.
Okay. She's aware that you're having this here, or that you're applying for this, and that you would need help getting to the hospice facility.
Right.
Okay. All right, sir. All right. Well, Mr. Garrison, I wonder if you could tell us what, at the time of the crime, what was going on in your life? What would lead you to do a thing like that, sir?
What was going through my mind at that time, I had had a stroke and had severe medical issues, and the problem was that I was not functioning as a man for my wife and everything, and I was stressed in straws, I was doing things that I normally wouldn't have done. Everything that I did is just, I can't explain it other than I was just stupid. You know, I knew it was wrong and I did it. And my manhood was getting in the way. You know, I wanted to prove myself to myself that, you know, just.
So, sir, this didn't occur over a period of days or months. This occurred over a period of years.
That's it.
Did it occur to you to get help from a doctor, or?
I went to a psychiatrist and tried to talk about it, but as soon as he said that he would have to notify the police of anything, it scared me.
Okay, sir. Okay, I'm going to see if fellow board members have any questions, since I've been doing all the question asking here.
I guess.
Do you all have any questions?
Yes,
Dr. Wright has a question for you, sir.
Well, I think you said, sir, that your family is have you discussed this at all with your family, that you might be trying to be imminent danger of death, this IDD? Have you discussed that at all with your family, that you're dying, sir?
No, ma'am. No, sir, I have not.
So they don't even have the slightest idea that what the doctors have said about you, sir?
No.
Now, I know you said that you communicate with your family through the mail, but when is the last time that a family member has been to visit you, or your friend has been to visit you, sir?
I've never been visited by anybody.
Oh, okay. And what's your friend's name in Scottsdale, sir? What is your friend's name in Scottsdale?
Joanne Jones.
And she is 86 years of age, therefore she is up there as well, sir.
Yes.
Okay.
She is my spiritual advisor also.
She's your spiritual advisor. So
yes,
I don't quite know how to ask this question, but let me just ask this question. Why at this point in time in your life that you wish to come back out into the community at this particular time? What's in your mind at this time? Why do you want to go to a hospice or some type of facility at this time, sir?
I would like to be able to leave the Department of Corrections, and in my life was some dignity, not being strapped or being chained up, and have a little comfort.
Let me just ask you one other quick question for time or consideration. Now, what is the day like in your life at this time, sir? I mean, can you move around? I know you're in a wheelchair and all of that, but can you move around? What can you do, sir?
I cannot do nothing. I go from my housing location to medical to my diabetic shot and my medication, and then I come back to my house and I just stay in the house.
So how did you get from your house to the infirmary? So somebody pushed you, or how did you get there?
I have a walker that I use, and it has a seat, and I walk, and when I get to where I can't walk anymore, I sit on the rest, and then when I get to feel I'm okay again, I get up and walk. It takes me about 30 minutes to go about 150 yards.
Okay, so you are somewhat mobile at this time, sir.
Yes, I am.
Okay. Thank you so very much. Thank you, Honorable.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Windhouse.
Mr. Neal, do you have questions?
Pardon me. I'll put this on. I'm just looking at the some of the medical stuff, and all I can find so far is that he told one doctor that another doctor told him he had 6 months to live. And I'm trying to find the beat. So, sir, the part of this was talking about left heart catheterization. Did they complete that and set some stents?
Yes.
How are you doing from that then?
I still have some problems with my breathing and the congestiveness.
Okay, but did that last stent set, did that help?
No, not really.
Okay. I don't see anything in here that's much more specific. This is a little bit, if one was back to when they were talking about that they were able to do that. Bypass surgery in 2015?
Yes.
How much blocky did you have when you did that bypass?
100%.
Okay. Which, did you have a heart attack at work today?
Yes.
Okay. And then since then you just had stents?
I've actually had three other heart attacks.
Well, did you have another cabbage, or did you just stents placed?
Stents placed.
Okay.
I've got
total
27 stents.
That's how I had a lot. Okay, well, who's the last doctor that you actually spoke with about your need for hospice?
Kumar and Dr. Kennett, Dr. Kennett and Dr. Kumar.
Okay. And when was that last consultation?
In January.
Okay. And were either one of those the ones that said you had 4 months or less to live?
Yes.
Which one?
Dr. Kumar.
Okay. I don't have any further questions.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. So, Mr. Garrison, how long have you had this? I mean, you have obviously serious heart problems and health problems. How long have you had them to where it's this serious?
Since 1998, I had my first heart attack.
In 98?
Yes.
Okay. And so all this time, since 98, have you been... Have there been times when things got much worse, or, you know, were you okay for a while and then suddenly it got worse?
Yes, it's gotten worse over the last 4 years. I had the defibrillator placed inside, pacemaker defibrillator.
Uh-huh.
I've had the aortic valve replaced.
Okay.
And the mitral valve, the subgroup, the two-star, wanted to replace those mitral valve because it's leaking.
Okay.
And
so Finish what you were saying.
My heart is with just less than 10%, and I have no quality of life. I can't function. I can't go more than 25, 30 feet without having to stop to catch my breath. I don't want to die this way.
Okay, sir. So you're saying you were first became this ill in 1998, and yet this crime occurred after that. So you were actually ill at the time the crime was committed, sir?
Yes, ma'am. And I had a stroke in 2001, a major stroke.
Okay. All right. But you were healthy enough at the time to carry out the crime.
Yes, I guess you didn't say that, yes.
Okay, you were just healthy enough to carry out the crime. Okay, so...
It wasn't...
Go ahead.
The crimes that I committed, I admit to, and I deserve the prison times, and I apologize for everything that I've done. And it wasn't me that was doing that.
Who was it?
It was somebody that just... it was just somebody that just didn't care, I guess. And that's what I say. I was going to marital problems, I was going through everything. The health issues, loss of jobs.
Oh, you lost your job in there too?
Yeah, I had my own business and I was losing bids on jobs because of all this. Everything was just going downhill. Everything, my whole life just blew up.
So what kind of work did you do? What work were you doing?
I did commercial flying. I did specialized flying the basketball players in San Jerusalem.
We have some others. If board members don't have any other questions,
I mean, not a question. I guess it is a question, but it's not quite a question. So, how are you able to commit these offenses if you already had these heart attacks, sir? You already had heart attacks and all of that. I mean, you said 99, and some of these offenses was in 05. I mean, that's about 6 years different, 7 years. So why would you do that? I mean, that has nothing to do with your situation. I mean, in my opinion, I'm not an expert, but that had nothing to do with your situation and related to your situation with your wife. So what was... So, I mean, how are you able to commit these crimes, sir? Or you didn't commit these offenses? That's what you're telling this board. You didn't commit them, sir? That it was somebody else?
No, I did commit them.
Okay, so you did commit them. Okay.
I did commit them.
Okay.
And I wish I could go back and change time, but I can't. And all I can say is I'm sorry for them, and I've lost everything that meant anything to me over all this, and plus my time here in prison. And my wife has passed away, that we were married for 26 years. You know, it just, everything just blew up on me.
My final question, sir, is very simple. Did you get any, I mean, in your opinion, when you committed this offense or these offenses, did you get any satisfaction at all, or were you just doing something to spite your wife, sir?
No satisfaction. None whatsoever.
Okay, sir. You answered the question. Thank you so very much, sir. Thank you so very much, Honorable Mr. Rittenhouse.
You're quite welcome. Mr. Garrison, we have some other people in the room today that would like to provide some testimony. We have two victims, and we also have a representative from the county attorney's office. So I'm not sure, would you like to speak? If you'd just come up and state your name first, and then tell us what you'd like to tell us.
Scott Lee Hunter.
Thank you, sir.
I'm the uncle and father to the two victims.
Okay.
Honorary board. This man has totally destroyed my niece and my daughter. And when my daughter found out that he was possibly going to get a chance to get out, she hasn't slept since. This guy is a violent predator. There's probably more victims that are younger that could not, if I know of, that could not speak because they were too young and need to get charged for it because they were too young and they were around him and alone at the time. This man has done nothing for his problem, hasn't gotten any help for it, and he's asking to be let out. You know, what is going to protect these children in our community if this man gets out? Obviously, he can get around. There's just, he's, you know, he hasn't been, he's supposed to be on lifetime probation when he gets out. My daughter is just thoroughly frightened that this man has a chance to get out. And I'm afraid for it. This guy is vindictive, and there's no way that my daughter's going to be safe because she still lives in the community. You know, I found out 2 days ago, and I drove in from Colorado to get her. You know, I drive for a living, and I don't see anybody here for him. I don't believe any of the stuff that he says about that he's been talking to people, because none of his family wants to have anything to do with him. His best friend that he worked for, where's his name? He ain't even here. His cousin Tony St. Meyer, they worked together all their lives. Where is he at? He don't really have nothing to do with this guy because he knows what he is. And I believe that this man should do the contract when he signed for it, because he was sick at the time when all this happened. And he knew that he was sick when he signed the 17 years. And I think he should do every day, every minute, every second of that time. Because it should be longer. This guy should not be out in public with children. He's tore up our whole family, all the kids that have spent time with him alone. This isn't about his manhood and this and that. It happened long before the stroke. This has been going on a long time. And this man should do the time, and he hasn't protested for anything. He hasn't done nothing for his problem. You know, it's just, he hasn't done any kind of class, anything. You know, and it's just, I just don't see how this woman can let this man out in the street. He doesn't belong out there. He doesn't deserve any mercy. My daughter, my niece tried to commit suicide because of this. And it's just, she doesn't even want to face it anymore. That's why she's not here. And my daughter is just trembling and is just so upset that this man is going to get out of the street. She's literally afraid of what could happen if he comes out. Because there's no control once he's released or this thing comes back. Hopefully you consider what I've had to say, and thank you all for your time.
Thank you, and thank you for coming down, sir. Any questions, sir? No? Thank you very much, sir. And would you like to? Okay.
No.
Ms. Bickler.
Thank you. Good morning to the board members. Just for the record, my name is Sarah McFlicker. I'm with the Maricopa County Attorney's Office. With the Sex Crimes Bureau, and I submitted a letter in response to the request today, so you should have that in your
record. We do have that, thank you.
Thank you very much. A couple of things that I just wanted to address briefly. There are a number of things that the inmate mentioned this morning that I believe actually show how much of a potential risk he is should he be released. In the near future. I frankly don't think that he assisted with some of the things that he responded with or mentioned. One, there is no program, hospice, or facility care that has been set up, as far as I can see. It looks as though he's got a wish for going to some outside facility, but it does not appear as though there's been any significant steps toward that situation. We have not seen any kind of confirmation that he's been accepted into any program, let alone even an application. It's more simply that he's just interested in being released. The family support that he indicates he has, we frankly just aren't seeing any. At least no one is here today. It is possible that there is family support out in the community, but there's been no letters that at least my office has received in relation to this individual. It's also my understanding that one of the victim's parents spoke with this inmate's brother, who he cited as someone that was his family support, and she indicated that the response was the opposite of that, that there is no support from that brother. That is obviously just from word of mouth that I've been given, but it appears as though there is no family support that has been provided, or at least would assist in any kind of support or stability should the defendant, the inmate be released. It is also important to note this individual does have lifetime probation terms that are in place once he's released, and so even if he's requesting to go live at one of those facilities that he mentioned, the adult probation department would still have to approve such living situations because they have the ability to approve or disapprove of where someone resides. He will have to register as a sex offender, and these locations may or may not accept people who have sex offense felony history, who are registered sex offenders, or who are on sex offender probation, which is what he would be on once he's released. And so there's simply nowhere close to a guarantee of security in that he would be going to those facilities. I do want to point out the fact that the inmate has indicated he had significant medical issues at the time the offenses were committed, which in from my position means to me that he is susceptible to committing offenses again. If he did this while he was ill previously, there is nothing to say that it will stop him from doing it again. We have offenders who commit sexual offenses on kids who are wheelchair bound, who are paralyzed, who are in significant medical situations of lack of mobility. This individual, in fact, does have mobility and, again, has shown that he will and has committed offenses while ill. I don't know what the board has in front of it because we don't have all of the documents, so we don't have any medical documentation. All we have is the application that the inmate submitted, which had a statement from Dr. Robertson, I believe, from the Department of Corrections. We do not have anything from a Dr. Kumar who indicated the formats to live diagnosis or prognosis. So if the board has that, I would leave that alone. However, it's my understanding the board needs an outside provider to provide such a prognosis, as well as then the Department of Corrections provider. I just have not seen that, so I cannot confirm, but that's what I've seen. It is important to note that the inmate also indicated that it was really, sounds like, life stressors that were the catalyst to him committing his offenses. Assuming that those are, in fact, the things that carried him to the point of engaging in the offenses that he did, I would ask the board to consider how much of a life stressor what he is describing as his imminent death would affect him. And such significant life stressors could seriously be a concern to the safety of our community. So for those reasons, my office is standing behind the letter that I submitted, which is an objection, basically, an opposition to him being released. I am happy to answer any questions should the board members have any. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any questions? And we do have a little bit of medical information, and it's provided by Dr. Da Silva. And there's also Dr. Pettit mentioned in here that was one of the ones he mentioned, I think, to Mr. Neal.
He did indicate that name.
Kumar and Pettit. And that, I see that name in this brief report that we have.
And just so that if the board is willing to provide that information, does that packet of information provide that imminent death prognosis of 4 months?
I haven't read every word. It's medical in nature.
Okay.
And I don't see that in here, but we do have the statement that I believe you already have from Dr. Robertson.
Right.
It would be the department's chief medical person, so.
Thank you, and obviously, the board can consider whatever information it would like. Sorry, sir.
Thank you.
Just one more. Dr. Robinson, usually, since he's the director, he usually does not base his diagnosis on personal examination of the subject. It's based on medical reports, you know, that he would say that. But that's the only place I see it here, other than mentioning, a doctor mentioned that, Mr. Garrison said, another doctor said.
Right, and that is what would highlight this, my concern, my office's concern is just that there does not appear, from what I have been provided, any verification of that prognosis. Even if there was a verification of that prognosis, my office still has the concerns that I've already previously mentioned to the board. Thank you.
Okay, and thank you so much. And I do want to mention on record that we do have the letter from Ms. McVicker, and it's dated April 15th, 2019, and it does object to any reduction of this sentence at this time.
Thank you.
Now, should we try to get Dr. Robertson again? Because
I don't think it's necessary. I think he's already stated to his opinion.
Okay, so we have Dr. Robertson's opinion. Okay, any other testimony from anyone else, victim services? No letters? Okay, thank you. All right, Mr. Garrison, we're coming up toward the end of your hearing then, sir, and I want to give you the opportunity to make a final statement before the board goes into discussion and deliberates and makes a decision. So is there anything else, sir, that without repeating something you've already told us, sir?
I'm sorry for what I did, and I can't change what I did.
Okay, Mr. Garrison, thank you. The board is going to go into discussion, and we just ask that you just listen to the discussion, remain on the phone, and we'll be back with you in just a moment, okay, sir?
Okay.
Thank you, sir. The board's now in discussion. This is a case where we aren't able to talk to a medical professional, but we in this case, I think we have enough other information that we don't need that testimony. Based on the fact that Mr. Garrison does not have a solid place to go, any other time we've heard imminent danger of death, the person has got an arranged place to go, an approved place to go. And Ms. McClure brings up that he'll have to register as a sex offender, and these two places and maybe others may not allow that, may not allow a resident to be there with that. And if that's the case, we don't really have a solid place. At this point, I think it would be irresponsible of this board to recommend this to the governor. I personally can't support it. But I would certainly listen to any thoughts of fellow board members. Mr. Neal?
Thank you, Ms. Rittenhouse. Well, I agree. There's no approved placement. It's the medical staff recommended that he research that because of his condition. And Dr. Robinson was basing his prognosis based on the information we don't understand. But I can also, I can understand saying, he's pretty severe. He may only have 4 months to live with us. But I agree with you, we would be totally responsible to move this on to the governor for 2 reasons. One is, I don't think the governor would have enough information because of lack of placement. And two, because of lack of placement, if it should be approved by the governor, where do we go? And I would also have to throw in there that the issue that he personally blamed his illness or the offense on his illness, meaning to me that given the opportunity, because he's even more ill, then he would be more likely to do it than he was to begin with. So I would not recommend this to the governor for commutation.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. Dr. Wright, any thoughts?
I think that, you know, in addition to looking at the medical records, I think the board can also take into consideration the offense itself. And I think when I look at the offense, going back to 1989, I think it was, this was an offense that was totally unnecessary. And I think we do have another pending offense that touched on the record. And I think that I just would not be comfortable, in addition to what the two of you already pointed out, I just would not be comfortable and permitting him to be released at this time, even though he's requesting IDD. In addition to that, I know he can't go very far, but he is still mobile. He's not, he's not bedridden, nothing of that nature. And therefore, as one board member, I'm not in favor. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'm going to make a motion then, and my motion is that we not pass this application for phase two commutation, that we not pass that on to the governor.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, seconded Mr. Neal. Agreed, Dr. Wright. Okay, back to you, Mr. Garrison. The board, you've heard the board's discussion, and the board has voted not to pass your application further for recommend it to the governor for consideration, sir. So, one of the reasons during our discussion, so you're welcome to reapply, and I'll check with our chairman there. You can certainly do some more research and reapply, sir. But at this time, your application is being denied, sir.
Okay.
So thank you, Mr. Garrison, for participating in the hearing today. Certainly, thank you very much for participating, and Ms. McClicker, thank you. And we'll bring the hearing to a close, sir. Thank you.